should ask God if there's any point in our staying married. And we did. We prayed and we asked him if we should try and keep going, because neither of us felt like it. But we both seemed to get the same answer: stay in your marriage. And I'm telling you that we were married another 60 years, and I miss him so now. At night, I often look over and there's nobody there. And young people, all I can tell you is sometimes God has reasons that we don't understand. But we should trust him. And maybe you two came together for a reason. Well, she gets to that point and the crowd gets upset. No, no, you know, just the chorus of boos and hisses and uh-uh. And finally, the poor lady has to be escorted out, you know, by security, because the crowd is really, really revved up. Well, let's take a look at conflict in a marriage, should we? James asks this question, chapter 4. What causes fights and quarrels among you? That's a good question. Why do couples argue? Why is there strife between a husband and a wife often? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but you don't get it. Each of you wants your own way. Each of you has desires that feel that they should be first in a relationship. Let's talk about some of the origins of conflict in a marriage. Where fights and trouble. Disappointed expectations. You really expect the other person to do something they don't do, or to be something that they're not. And over time, because they disappoint you, it makes you angry. They should be more sensitive. They should be more talkative. They should be more caring. They should be whatever. Your expectations, whatever they were, are disappointed. Now, we all have to adjust our expectations when we get married, right? Are we agreed in that? I had lived with 3 or 4 guys in an apartment before I married Cheryl. And let's just say our hygiene practices were probably different than what a group of women living together might practice. We men were a little bit more lax on some things. Cheryl, for example, was quite shocked to learn after we got married that I would blow my nose in the bathroom towels. Oh, like none of you have ever done something like that. Okay, I see. We have the Sadducees seated over here, and we have the Pharisees on this side. Well, I quit blowing my nose a few weeks ago. Now, if you come and use our towels, they're safe. Okay. But she was rather disappointed that I did that. There's prideful behaviors. I guarantee you, underneath every tension in your marriage, just scrape away the topsoil, pride is underneath it. Pride is at the root of every conflict and every argument and everything that goes wrong in a husband and wife. I guarantee you that pride somehow is there when things are not what they should be. And pride is, you know, it's the original sin, isn't it? It's what made the devil who he is. He was once leading the choruses of heaven. He once, the light bearer, was perhaps the most exalted of all angels. And in his pride, he wanted some of God's glory for himself. And the result is he falls and he becomes the devil, and he takes a third of the human, or of the angelic host, with him. And then Adam and Eve, where did they go wrong? It was pride. God said, don't do this. Satan says, God's not telling you the truth. You can't trust him. He knows that if you eat this, you'll be like him, and he'd be jealous. And in pride, they do. And so everything that goes wrong, I mean, if you're wondering what's wrong between us today, oh God, please help me know my part in this. I can help you right now. I can just say, trace it back to where the pride comes from, and you'll have found where it needs to be fixed. In the end, I have to deal with my pride in order to come to my wife and ask her forgiveness, or to admit that I've done something wrong, that pride is what was behind it. It sneaks up on us. I took our kids once to a petting zoo in southern Wisconsin. Took our little ones up to Camp Timberlee, and they have a petting zoo. And
my little kids, they were having a great time. And you know what? There were llamas there. Been around llamas? I say they're like a horse that's been designed by a committee. They're kind of a strange-looking animal with some unusual features. Well, I gave my kids some money because there were machines. If you put a quarter in, you could get some feed pellets. And you could go up to the llamas, and you could say, here, and they'd come and nuzzle and eat them, and you could get close. So I emptied my pockets, and the kids, well, the quarters were all gone, but I wanted to feed the llama. So I thought, here's an idea. I'll act like I have feed pellets. So I came up with my hand like this, and sure enough, he comes over. He starts nuzzling and nuzzling, and, you know, he doesn't find anything. Well, he takes two steps back. He puts his head back. And you know what he did next? He spit. That's right. Just like that. My glasses go green. Just like that. You know, oh, man. Did you know I found out later that their spit comes from their stomach? Oh, it's made an awful journey before it gets to you, I can guarantee you. Well, he spits. Well, I'm thinking, this llama spit at me. And so I think for a minute, and that irritates me. I think I didn't deserve that. So I take a couple steps back and I go, I spit right back at him. Well, my kids are watching, you know. Yeah. Later on, I heard over lunch them kind of whispering, Mom, Dad spit at the llama. Oh, dear, he's had a hard day, and I forgot what Cheryl said, but pride, you know, it's so silly. It's so foolish sometimes, but it enters into our lives and particularly creates conflict. Wrongful assumptions. Oh, there's nothing in marriage that can create trouble like assumptions. Oh, I know why you did that. I know what you're thinking. Or you should know what I'm thinking. All the assumptions that we make that can be completely off target. Rejecting attitudes. Where we get to the place in our life where we decide, you know what, I just can't accept this about you any longer. I just can't deal with this. I've had enough. Now, there may be some things where that's justified, but quite often our rejection grows out of the fact that we feel that in this area of life, we are superior to our spouse, or they are superior to us. I want to take a look at communication, because this is where things can go off the rails really, really quickly. Because, and I'm convinced of this, men and women view communication differently. We do not see it alike. Now, today I want to speak to the men to start with. Men, there is no husband bashing allowed in this seminar. We will not beat up any husbands today. A lot of marriage seminars come and they just hammer you. You know, you should be more like your wife. You should be more like her. You should be more talkative, relational. You should be sensitive. You know something? I there's none of that allowed today. Because God, the Bible says, created them male and female. He distinctly and by design made men and women different, and it is wrong to try and make them like each other when his design is not that that should be the case. In fact, today is not about changing the person you're married to. Sometimes people come to this with kind of a quiet assumption. Oh boy, I hope this changes them today. Actually, no, we are not about changing the person you're married to today. We're about you understanding how God made them, appreciating that and valuing that perhaps more than you ever have before. Appreciating that God made us different and for a reason. I believe one of the reasons that we communicate differently and even see communication differently is that we could learn unselfishness. That we could learn what it means to put someone else's interests ahead of our own. What it means to be humble and what it means to attempt to accept somebody as they are rather than as we wish they would be. But let's get into communication. Men view communication as the byproduct of a shared activity, whereas women see it as the activity itself. Men communicate when they are doing something, when they are engaged in something else they tend to start talking. And they tend to open up. Now, let's say, for example, Pastor Enns makes me in charge of Men's Day for a day here. He takes a big gamble, and he says, okay, you can be in charge of Men's Day. So I get up on a Sunday, say, next Saturday, it's going to be Men's Day at Faith, and you guys, you are going to want to mark this on your calendar. Save the date. Get your wallet out right now, your Visa cards, because you're going to want to make a registration. We're getting a bus, a chartered bus, and we are going to go to a Starbucks for the day, and all of us are going to get in a big circle, and we're going to share. Oh, boy, there'd be a stampede, wouldn't there? I mean, maybe we'd need two buses. I'd be the only person on that bus who planned it. But if I were to announce to the women, we are going to Starbucks for the day, and all of you can go in there and order whatever you want, and you can talk. In fact, you can all talk at the same time. There are no limits on how much you can say or who's saying what. Everybody gets to talk. I mean, there would be a rush. And at the end of that day, you'd say, this is one of the most wonderful days I've had in years. We're going to do this again. This Bob is a genius. Okay. Men, what I would do, I'd get up and I'd say one word if I was planning Men's Day. Food. That's right. Grilled, steamed, boiled. Food, men. And there'd be a line. I mean, among that, we might have competition that day or some sports. You know, we might have a project, you know, that type of thing. We'd insult each other during the day. That's part of male bonding, you know. Are you working? Are you hard? Oh, I'm hardly working or working hardly, you know. When you were born, the doctor slapped your mother. You know, I mean, it just that's how men bond, is that we kind of insult each other and say things. But a Men's Day, I've learned, is all about food to start with. You've got to have great food and, you know, cook it and smoke it and barbecue it and whatever you're going to. And then have some events where they're doing something. Maybe that day we build a small addition, or we roll sod, or we, you know, put down a curb that needs to be done, or we redo a room, or we drywall it. And the guys are there, and they're having a good time. And while they're doing it, they're talking. They're talking with each other. See, let me explain something about men to you ladies, that we need in life what's called shoulder-to-shoulder time. In other words, when men get together, they're not looking at each other necessarily in the face, sharing deeply. You know, when men are at work and somebody comes in, hey, how was your sales call? It went bad. Oh, come here, somebody needs a hug, you know, come here. No, it doesn't happen that way. You know, if you're friends, you'll say, well, listen, you know, you're a loser. What did you expect? You know, and that's what your friends will say to you. No, they'll say, hey, man, you're good. Tomorrow you'll be back. That next client, yeah, he's tough. But you know what? You're good at what you do. Just hang in there. Men have a different way of affirming and speaking to each other. But I'll tell you, you notice when men have a night together to watch football or ESPN, they aren't in a room sharing. They're in a room sitting side by side. They've ordered pizza. They got their feet up on the counter. You know, they may be saying things about the quarterback or whatever. But at the end of the night, they go home saying, this was good. Let's do this again sometime. This was fun. Shoulder-to-shoulder time. Women want face-to-face time, where they really do look each other in the eye and they really do share their hearts. And there's nothing wrong with either one. Okay? One is not better, one is not inferior, one is not broken, one is not superior. God just made us differently. And men, ladies, will talk when they're doing something that's an activity, which means there is an opportunity for you to get your husband to talk if the two of you can find something every day, cheap, available, that, you know, my wife and I take walks. When we take a 30-minute walk, more talking gets done. I talk more than I do the rest of the day to her. And I don't even know, when we're walking, I'm comfortable talking. And we get all sorts of stuff. We bike when the weather's good. Now that scares our kids because we're in our 50s. And they go, oh, please, no spandex. And I promise them, no, we're not going to be out in racing shorts or whatever. But Cheryl swims. Sometimes I go with her to the swimming pool and I swim laps with her. And we talk. It's just so natural. I don't mind it. But if she says to me those three dreaded words that every man shudders at, honey, let's talk. Oh, man. I will, sweetheart, but I got to change the furnace filter. I'll be right back, you know, and I'm downstairs. I've got something to do, I promise you. Because we're not all that comfortable with this face-to-face thing and whatever. But if we can be doing something together, we are okay talking, and we will. So find something you both enjoy. It does not have to cost you anything. You don't have to travel far. You don't have to join a club or whatever. Really, just go for a walk in your neighborhood or do something together every day that you both enjoy. Your husband will talk to you more than he has talked before. I had a German father who was quite reserved and stoic, but a real fine man to the core, but he didn't like to talk. And growing up, I didn't know much about him other than he was a hard worker, a provider. He took us to church and whatever. I'll tell you, when I got to know my dad, and I thank the Lord for this, was college. When he started during the summer, he was an educator, so in the summer he had those months off. He started a roofing company. And he re-roofed houses, and he asked me if I wanted to join him, and you know, it was good money, and I thought, I'll try this. And I found out I loved it. I loved roofing. I loved the order, the courses. The humidity wasn't so great, and neither was sometimes all the grime and grit. But Dad and I, all day long, up and down these ladders, working across houses and going up valleys and putting in trim and flashing and going around chimneys. Do you know, while we were up on the roof, he started telling me about the Great Depression. He started telling me about growing up on this farm. He told me he lost his mother when he was 17 to rheumatic fever. He told me about going to college and volunteering for the Army Air Corps during World War II. He told me about flight training. He told me about Europe and his combat missions. He told me all these things while we're just pounding away one course and, you know, just working our way up to the top, cutting shingles, capping buildings. I wouldn't trade those 5 summers on the roof for anything. Not because of just the good money we made. I finally met my dad. And I found out really what a wonderful person he was. I mean, I knew that to a degree, but you understand what I'm saying. He never talked. Mom always used to say at home, well, would you talk more? Say something. We're all here. And you know, what good does that do to a man to say talk? You know, what's he supposed to do? Bark or roll over or what? It never brought out anything. But when we started doing things together, he really opened up. Men will talk, ladies. It's not that they won't talk. It's got to be, though, in a setting that really they allows them to, because they see communication so differently. And men, we have to, you see, they estimate that women talk between 30 and 60,000 words a day. Men talk between 15 and 30. That's exactly half. Okay, so a lot of times, like our gun, our magazine clip, it's empty when we come home. We've shot all our words, and you're just getting going. You know, you've just warmed up. You're halfway through. And that's where the conflict comes. And man, if we're going to love our wives, we have to understand that their need to talk is the way they feel loved. That it is in talking to them that they feel they're connecting to us, and it is how they begin to believe we care. Now, guys, you've already learned this, those of you that are married for some years. When your wife brings to you a whole set of problems, any of you have a wife that comes and says, oh, no, listen what happened. This broke down, and this was wrong, and whatever. And the kids today, whatever, and the car died at the intersection. Well, guys, we've all discovered this. When they're telling us their problems, they do not want solutions. Have you discovered that? Or have you stumbled into giving them help? Have you tried to fix them? Oh, boy, that works. Well, you mean the car died in the intersection? Well, why didn't you pump it twice like I tell you to, you know, and then turn it over? No, man, when the car dies in the intersection, they want you to feel the experience. Oh, sweetheart, the car died. What frustration. What embarrassment. Cars honking. Oh, the pain. The pain. See, they don't want you to fix them. Every time I give my wife the solution and smile like I've just done something great, she's not smiling back at me. She says, "You're not listening." I go, "But you just asked me what to do about our son's math homework." "You're not listening." And I go, "Yes, I am." "Well, no, you see, she just wants me to feel my son's math homework." Wow, he got some wrong. Bummer. Wow. You know, and then she'll say, "Do you really mean that?" You know, so it's different. Men, they want you to feel and empathize with what they've experienced. They already know the solution. They already know how they would fix it. They aren't looking for answers. They're looking for acceptance and understanding, and that we might connect with them on a level where they feel understood. And that is not broken. That is not wrong. That is uniquely the fingerprints of God on the female soul. And it is a beautiful thing. It's just different. So we have to accept that. We also have a different set of emotional needs. And this is where we most perplexing. And some of this I've taken from Dr. Willard Harley's excellent book, His Needs, Her Needs. If it's been years since you've read a marriage book, here's one that two or three today I'll recommend. One would be His Needs, Her Needs, A Fair Proofing Your Marriage. It's become a classic in the field of marriage. Dr. Harley was actually even a professor of mine during college and has counseled thousands of couples. And out of that counseling, he came to the conclusion that a lot of the reason couples have problems or their marriages seem stuck is they don't understand each of them have different needs. Let's take a look at those, a few of them, and try and unpack them. We'll start with women. Women have a need for affection. That is different than a need for sex. Affection, they are not the same thing. There's a female sexuality, but affection is different than that. Affection just simply means your wives want you to hold them. They want you to touch them. They want you to take their hand. They want you to speak to them. And they want you to show them an affection in a way that is not trying to lead to someone somewhere else, if you know what I mean. They want simply affection for the sake of affection. All right? And when you were dating, you knew that. Instinctively, you showed them affection. You took their hand, or you sat next to them in a booth, or you put your arm around them, or whatever you did. You understood, you saw how they lit up. You saw how much that affection meant to them. It hasn't changed just because you're married. Years ago, the advice columnist, Ann Landers, did a poll. She asked female readers, if you had a choice between your husband making love to you or just simply cuddling and speaking to you tenderly, which would you prefer? Well, overwhelmingly, they said making love. No, they didn't. Just trying to see if you're listening. They said overall they wanted affection. They wanted the affection. So here is your first assignment, men. And you're going, "Oh, I knew I shouldn't have come today. Just pulled over the covers and stayed asleep. Because I knew he'd give me an assignment, and then she'll ask me if I'm going to do it, and life will be miserable." No, this is going to work for you. Guys, this is going to work for you, because there's payoffs coming for you in a minute. Just trust me. I want you to hug your wife each day for 90 seconds. 90 seconds, a minute and a half. I want you to put your arms around her and just hold her. Now, the first 10 seconds, you'll be going, "Oh, boy." The first 20, you know, I wonder if I could get my money back from that seminar. You know, you're into about 30 seconds. You're going, "Well, this isn't too bad." 45 seconds, you're going, "I remember when we used to do this." In about a minute and a half, you go, "You know what? I could be here tomorrow."
I could do this again. Now, now you have to pay attention. 90 seconds is all you need. I got a letter from a couple in Utsburg, Wisconsin, people we know who wrote to me and attended the seminar. Bob, I really enjoyed your seminar, and particularly we want to thank you for the suggestion for the 90-minute hug. They said, at first it was hard to find the time, but now it's a regular part of our life. 90 minutes. No, they had misunderstood. 90 seconds is all that you have to do. You don't need 90 minutes. If you want 90 minutes, it's yours, but not necessary. Just hold your wife and show her affection. She will feel loved because women feel loved through affection. God wired them that way, and we need, and again, that is not necessarily the way we men were wired, was affection. We have different ways of bonding, but not that. Conversation, we've just been through that. But for your wives to feel loved, you have to talk to them. You do. And in fact, Emerson Eggerich says, even when our wives confront us, they confront us because they're trying to connect. They're trying still to connect heart to heart. And conversation is a way that a woman will feel like her husband is invested in her life, values her, cares about her, wants to understand who she is. And that's why you do something you both enjoy. Because when he's talking and it comes in a natural sort of way, you're getting that need met and things are working good. Another one, family involvement. I wish I had understood this earlier, but I see it now. All of us have love banks, Dr. Harley says. Our hearts are like love banks, and we're either making deposits in each other's love banks each day, or we're making withdrawals. The account is either growing or it's overdrafting. The account is either compounding with interest or it's at the point where it could bounce. All right? And so it's important that we make deposits in each other's love banks, but the currency is different. It's not the same. For women, the currency is affection that you put in their love bank. It's conversation in the bank, and it's family involvement. What do I mean by this? The time, if we have children, we spend with our kids as men, our wives count as time spent with them. If we spend time with our children, playing with them, hanging out with them, rolling around on the living room floor, coaching the soccer team, whatever it is, if we're hanging out with our kids and we're spending time with them, our wives are feeling as if we are spending that time with them. Because in the female heart, there is this calculus that if he loves my babies, he loves me. If he loves the children that I bore, then I know he loves me. Because that umbilical cord is still connected, in a sense. Okay, guys, now if you think about this, you can use this to your advantage. For example, I like to go fishing. I'm a fisherman. I go up to Lake of the Woods in Canada every other summer or so when I can afford it. I just love Morson, Ontario, and the whole Lake of the Woods. It's 30 by 40 miles. It's got 3,000 islands. It's heaven on earth. So I go every year to my wife sometime in May. Oh, sweetheart, I love you so much. I just want to love you, and I want to meet your needs. That's why I'm taking the boys, and we're going fishing. See, every time I'm up there in that boat with those boys, and we're hanging out, and we're bonding, and I'm pulling in, honey, sweetheart, when I'm pulling in the walleye and the bass, I see your face. No, I don't mean, you know, you want to put that differently. You want to rephrase that. But, when I'm hanging out seriously with my daughters, they love to take the train to the city in Chicago, and sometimes will go with them, or I'll take my daughter on a speaking trip like this with me, and I have Megan or Mackenzie perhaps with me. When I come home, even if I've been gone days, sure, I won't say, where were you? You know, there's a lot that's undone here, and why were you not, you know, whatever. She'll go, how was it? The girls will go, we had a great time. And I'll go, yeah, it was terrific. We had so much fun.
in her heart, I've spent all that time with her, even though I was gone. And she just, those love bank deposits are enormous. And that's why, you know, whenever I, as a pastor, I always used to watch to see those dads that would carry the little ones around, even the infants. And, you know, we dads, we have fun with infants. We throw them up in the air and catch them. And our wives go, don't do that, you know. But we kind of think that they're unbreakable. And when I see dads invested in their kids and hanging around with them, I know they love their mother. I know that they've got a good marriage. I don't even have to dig very far into that. And, you know, we dads, when it comes to kids, we can be a little awkward. Like when I was a new dad, like I was 27 when Rob was born, and the ladies at church, a week after he was born, he came home, and I never, you know, what do you do with this little human, you know, and well, what's this about? And some ladies had kindly sewn a very nylon, slippery kind of blanket to hold him in, Rob. So I'm sitting in the kitchen looking at this son of mine, and I'm holding him, and I'm squeezing him in this nylon blanket. I squeezed him so hard, he shot right out of that blanket. He's like a banana out of a peel, boom, boom, right onto the floor. Yeah, you're probably wondering how our kids have reached adulthood by this point. You're probably... I had to say, honey, I broke the baby. Come in here. I mean, I don't know. Well, that's when mothers told me all sorts of stories. That was so comforting. She said, oh, our kids went down the stairs in a little, you know, stroller, and they did this and that, and they all survived. So, yeah, they're pretty tough. But we men, family involvement. Okay, let me just say something else, men. You're never too old for that. I don't care if your kids are grown. I don't care if they're in middle age. I don't care how old your sons or daughters are. They still need your involvement. It will be different than what it was at home, sure. But do you know how much it means for kids to have their dad call and say, I love you, thinking of you, proud of you? Keep going. We've been through tough things. I know you're going through a tough time right now. Maybe you've lost your job. Or maybe things are rough, but I remember those days. But I believe in you. I don't care how old you are. Your kids never outgrow that. Never, ever outgrow the need for you to do that. My dad still, he's 86. He lives in Arizona, still calls me. And those calls often pick me up.